everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom brings good news. We have really good rain chances next week. I think up to 70% some days, Tom.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the more optimistic readings
or
predictions.
Wow.
Typically, the National Weather Service is saying Monday through Thursday, 40, 50%, maybe 60%.
Yeah.
So those are good good odds, I
even
think.
Even if one of the days turns out to be a rain day, it'd be a big victory for us. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Friday, June 25th, 2021. We're on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI. We're 10 and a half years now into the radio project, and we have, of course, our worldwide live listening and podcast at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Friday, we like to do a big media shout-out to people like Dylan Smith, who is the editor-publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, I want to thank you. First of all, it's great to see you actually in person.
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, maybe a year and a half or so, but of course, you are a real sport during the whole pandemic thing and contributing to our Friday program via the phone, but nothing like seeing someone in person.
And it's good to see you doing so well after,
the
hassles you've been having.
The six-week anniversary is coming up on Monday, and I'm kind of looking at all these little milestones, like if it's a 12-week recovery, maybe I'm midway to this thing. And so, you know, taking little victories at a time. Also, I want to do a media shout-out to Dan Shear, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group. We had Jim Nitzel, actually, with us in studio last week. I had not seen Jim in person in a while. Jim's the senior editor at the Tucson Weekly, and there are other publications, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times, all have been very supportive of what we do. With me in studio, our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson City Manager Mike Ortega. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Well, it's very opportune.
It's nice to see you as well.
Thank you. It's opportune to have you. So much to talk about with the budget. And we already introduced Dylan, just a couple of extra little items about Dylan. He's the editor, publisher, and founder of now 11 years for the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's vice president of the Arizona Press Club.
Made me the president now, actually.
Are you the president?
Yeah, I got stuck with that job.
Okay.
Try that.
Congratulations.
There you go. Yeah. We will update our intro for you. Now the president of the Arizona Press Club. And are you still the immediate past chair of the Lion Publishers?
I'm no longer immediate past chair. I'm one of
You're
the past chairs. I'm
back.
Getting more down the road from that project.
Down the road. Lion is an acronym for local independent online news publishers. Okay, Mr. Ortega, let's begin with the funding package for the 12 months that are coming up here on July 1. If most listeners, I think, understand that governmental entities mostly operate, municipal entities operate on a fiscal year. You have some organizations, though, that like the Tucson Airport Authority, they operate on their fiscal year begins, I believe, on October 1st. So it's not always, I guess, July 30th or July 1, but that's the way it is for the city of Tucson. Overall, is this a spending package that is one that is unique because of COVID?
So I think it is unique from a couple of perspectives. Certainly the pandemic and the infusion of some of the federal dollars and inclusion of those monies in the budget is one. I think the projections we made last year during the pandemic for revenues and expenditures gave us some flexibility this year. We had some cash carry forward from the prior year just because we expected it to be worse, prepared for it to be worse than it actually was. Came in better than we had hoped and projected. So I do think that this is a unique year, and we're very excited. It gave us an opportunity to invest in a variety of different fronts, really looking at how this can help to shore up streets and a variety of things.
Tell me about the pay increase. There, city employees, some of them who have given service Some of your more long-term employees had a nice payday, didn't they, recently?
They did. And so there was a I'll take a little bit of a step back.
Okay.
There was a need for us to address vacancies and difficulty in recruiting and retaining staff in a variety of fronts. A lot of what you hear is police officers, but that actually was just one of many. Some of our other challenges were in IT, even in some of our equipment operator classes. And so what we did is early in the year, spoke with the mayor and city council and said, hey, look, we've really got some challenges here and we've got to make sure that we are competitive. So we went down a path of establishing a market analysis, went down to the classification level, had many, many hours of analysis in terms of what does the market look like. And it changes a little bit based on the type of position. So we're not necessarily competing against Albuquerque, but we do compete against some of the local agencies up to and including sometimes up into the Phoenix area. We also take a look at the chemistry between competing in the public sector versus competing against the private sector. And so when you fold all of that into an analysis, you can develop where people are going, why they're leaving, and what the dollars needed to stay competitive need to be. The total package was in excess of $33 million. What we did is really looked at the areas where we had trouble and used vacancy savings, dollars that we had set aside for positions over the years that we could use for salaries this coming year.
And the one-time $2,000 payment went to employees who've worked with the city for 28 years or more. So that was part of the $33.5 million budget package for salaries. What about minimum wage now? Is that up to $15 an hour in the city?
Right. So that was an action that was taken earlier in the fiscal year by Mayor Romero and the City Council to increase our minimum wage for city employees to $15 an hour. And so what that basically did is those positions that are permanent and long-term, temporary long-term, non-perm positions went up to $15 an hour. Then we looked at the impact that had on the next tiers, if you will, because, you know, bringing everybody into a certain pay rate causes compression within those ranks, but also those directly above. So we actually, I call it the accordion effect. So we had that discussion, implemented that earlier in the fiscal year, and really set the stage to help us with some of the recruitment, particularly at some of those lower paid positions.
Here's Dylan Smith. And Dylan, we should point out to our listeners, the money is that we're talking about here. It's a lot of money. It's $1.9 billion for the fiscal year beginning July 1st.
The entire city budget.
Yes,
not these pay raises.
No, not these pay raises. The pay raises.
Like, how many minimum wage employees do you guys have?
No, so it's almost $2 billion.
How much is that figure? Both, you know, those directly who had their pay boosted because of that, who were earning less than 15, but they, you know, the next couple of tiers, how much does all that add up to?
So it really is in excess of about $34 million, and it's closer to $35 million all in. So part of the discussion on that is, you know, from where and how those dollars are
mm-hmm.
spent. And so the conversation really had been before that. It was in the million range. And that was both the $15 as well as the accordion that I mentioned,
yeah.
which are the folks that are impacted by that.
And is that going to be sustainable? You know, a lot of what you're spending right now is money that you know, sort of banked from last year because sales taxes didn't, you know, fall off a cliff quite the way they might have, and you were prepared for them to do it. And, you know, a pretty good cushion of federal money coming, you know, to all sorts of local governments right now. Is this something that's going to be reasonably maintained?
Absolutely. And so the discussions, you know, we talk about the fiscal year 22 budget, but really the context of that is in the five-year projections.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is basically sat down with the council, went over a five-year plan that outlined exactly how we could afford these raises based on the use of some cash carry forward and the use of future revenues as well as future expense, you know, what we'll call it, increases, because we have always got increases in expenses in terms of insurances and all the other pieces that just normal costs of inflation. But absolutely. And the piece that was very important for me was to drive home that we are balanced this year. I show through the next 5 years how we are balanced the entirety of that 5 years, up to and including saying that we are structurally balanced in the 23-24 year. Because we have been able to bank certain dollars, we're using some of those dollars within this year, this coming year, and the following year. But by the end of that, we are actually structurally balanced, so it's sustainable, to use your term, sustainable going forward.
One thing that I've been pestering you and other city managers about for quite some time is the issue of pensions. Are we getting ahead of paying off kind of that backlog of what we were forced to pay pretty quickly? And is that something also, I guess, to repeat the term, are we going to be sustainable as far as paying for people's pensions?
It's a great question. You've been pestering me since you and I first met, Dylan. By the way, I'll bet you didn't know that that was almost 6 years ago. 6 years, July 1, I'll have my six-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So wow. I'll take that as congratulations, Dylan.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Well, you've been coming up with some creative solutions.
So I'll tell you, the pension was another creative solution, and I don't take all the credit for that. I mean, we've got a great team and the leadership of the council. But the pensions is absolutely one of our biggest challenges as an organization. So we had over $1 billion in unfunded liability that was really carrying the day and establishing what our rates were in the current years and the current configuration of our budgets. So what we suggested to the council was, why don't we go out and see if we can find someone who will finance a large portion of that. And what that will do is give us certainty in terms of the returns that we would need in order to stabilize the cost, because every year we were seeing huge cost increases. I mean, when you I think, Bill, when you and I first met, we were talking about $20 and $30 million increases in the pension costs.
Right.
So what I suggested to the council is, let's think about how we can go out and finance it. So it's basically like a high credit card debt that you refinance with a home loan, if you will. And so you go down the path of establishing a better rate, if you will, for that unfunded liability. And what that did, Dylan, is it took the peak off of that cost increase. And so those funds, if you will, that are saved can be put into municipal services, because otherwise we'd probably be in the reverse of having to cut municipal services in order to fund those costs going forward. So I would tell you very confidently that I believe we have gotten those pensions, at least on our end. And keep in mind, that is not a city council debt. We have to pay it, but that's actually a state of Arizona debt that their system, the system that they force us to use for our public safety employees, is the reason for that.
Yeah, that big back bill showed up because of changes that were made by the state legislature that then had to be reversed.
Exactly.
There wasn't enough money flowing into the system.
Right.
For several years, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, gee, here's a big bill.
Yeah, and so it was tough. Go ahead.
Let's pause right here and talk about my favorite bakery, Mike Ortega. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. Mike, do you like bakery goods?
Absolutely. I was thinking for the right word. Just look at me. Doesn't it look like I love it?
Well, no, you're in pretty good condition, and I know Dylan Smith enjoys something sweet occasionally.
And I'm definitely not as good about going to the gym as Mike is.
Yeah. I know. Mona's Danish Bakery, it's open right now, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. They're open for lunch. They open for their famous breakfast at 6:30. I love the breakfast. Couple of eggs over easy. Their bacon is outstanding. And the toast with some of that fresh out of the oven bread at Mona's just can't be beat. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. You can call ahead. You can order your bakery goods online or go into the bakery, find out what all the excitement is about. They are closed now on Monday. Owner and Chief Baker Steve needs a day off. They've been doing very well out of this post-pandemic period, and he deserves Monday off during the summer. But they are open for breakfast, 6:30 in the morning for a great breakfast. Be right back with Mike Ortega and Dylan Smith. It's Buckmaster on a Friday.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. With me in studio, Tucson City Manager Mike Ortega. We've been talking about the new $1.9 billion budget for the City of Tucson for the fiscal year 2022. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. I'm not through with the budget, but I want to get right into the kind of the big gorilla in the room right now, and that's the Tucson water rate hike. So let's talk a little bit about that, and then we can come back to the budget, because there are a couple of items there that really need to be talked about on the budget. So this water rate hike, the Tucson City Council unanimously approved this hike. It's very controversial. How would you characterize it, Mike Ortega?
Well, first and foremost, I think there's a lot of misinformation on what actually occurred. The council didn't approve a water rate increase for those residents that live in unincorporated Pima County. And so that there's four tiers to that, 10%, 20, 30, and 40. Everybody's focused on the 40, but you have to be a pretty significant water user in order to hit that.
Like
that
a commercial 40%.
Or a large residential user, but the large users are the ones that are going to see the biggest impact. For the average resident, it'll be about $6. $6 a month is what we're talking about here. And so those dollars, I think, as we go down the path, it needs to be clear, are generated, will be kept in the utility. There was a lot of discussion about where those monies would be used and where they would go. They'll be kept within the utility. The council has given us direction on three categories. The first is infrastructure. We all know that infrastructure is always a need and maintenance along those lines. Financial resiliency and making sure that those folks that are affected by difficulties because of the pandemic, just difficulties in general, are somehow helped. And so there's an opportunity in the expansion of the program. Our low-income program is specifically targeted to the unincorporated areas. I mean, that's really what some of the discussion was at the table. And then the other is really climate resiliency and sustainability. How does all that work, and enhancing tree canopy and making sure that our green stormwater infrastructure program is shored up. So those are the kinds of programs that'll be established and or expanded as a part of this. And so those are the, I think that's important that folks know about that.
Legal action is being threatened by the county. Do you expect it?
I can't comment on that. I really don't know. I've heard some of the things, but I can't comment.
Here's Dylan.
The relationship between the city and county seems to kind of go in cycles, and some of the language being tossed around by politicians, you're not a politician, you're a...
Thank you for pointing that out.
You're an employee of politicians, so I won't expect you to chime in, but can you tell us a little bit about how, over the past year through the trials of the pandemic, how that relationship has gone, the communication between people who are, working in departments? Are we at another point where things are going to, the strife will continue? I mean, you've got, on one side, you guys are being called greedy, councilman called the county borderline criminal. I mean, there's some serious language being tossed around right now.
So I think, Dylan, this is really fascinating because first time you and I met, you asked me about county relations, and so I appreciate that 6 years later we're still talking about it. I think first and foremost, I did reach out to the county administrator. We chatted, and we agreed that this was we'll call it isolated issue that will not have impacts in other areas. We partner all over virtually every mayor and council agenda. You'll see multiples of intergovernmental agreements and everything on our housing front to healthcare. So your point or your question was really more about the pandemic and our ability to partner. It was an incredible partnership. We stood up the TCC together as a point of distribution for the vaccines. We seamlessly stood up El Pueblo with again working with the county as a partner. We have some partnerships on some housing efforts, particularly with our asylum seeker efforts and some of the things that we're doing along those lines. So I would say that the relationship with the county is strong and has been strong over the pandemic, and I think it's been demonstrated to the value of the taxpayer and to the residents of the community.
This is like an outlier issue then. When you and Chuck Huckleberry sat down and talked together, you were talking about mutual ground that you two have agreed on over the years, and you've known Chuck a long time.
I have, and I think that there's still a lot of great work that we can do working together, and I know that we meet regularly and talk through common issues and common elements of opportunities and everything, like I said, from health care to how we deal with animal care and a variety of other pieces.
Something else that might be kind of a potential point of friction over the next year or so is the RTA, where the city's really pushing to change how that is structured power-wise. And, folks, Mayor Regina Romero especially, wants to have the city have more say where that money is spent.
Absolutely, and I think the bottom line is when you have close to 60% of the revenues and the corresponding population, you want to make sure that the residents of within the incorporated area are receiving their fair share, if you will. You hear that term bantered around. So I think that's a conversation that will continue. I think that there is some middle ground there in terms of an understanding. And I think it's not unique to Tucson. I think it's really looking at models that work to make sure that folks are represented in a fair and equitable manner.
Going back to the budget, as far as police, it was a 5-year program, right? That the city residents voted on, that were the infrastructure issues, getting rid of some of these really old police cars that needed a lot of upgrades. Where are we on that program? I've kind of lost track.
Sure. No,
was that approved?
Yeah, that was approved almost 5 years ago.
What?
And will actually...
Five years ago?
...is set to expire 1 year from now. So June 30 of 22 is when that's set to expire.
Wow.
And so we are doing very well, delivering very, very well on the promises and the commitments that we made to the voters, having conversations about what the next steps are with the council. And I think you'll be seeing that here in the not-too-distant future.
Could there be a reauthorization?
There's a lot of conversation about that. I think
take that back to the public.
I think that's exactly where we're having a lot of internal discussions about what that's going to look like and what the chemistry of that ask could be. Mm-hmm. A lot of it will be what the needs of the residents are and making sure we're flexible enough to provide them with the services that they're looking for.
But the department itself now has been brought up to a standard that the officers seem very pleased with as far as the vehicles that. That's their office. They're out there, 8-10 hours a day in that office.
Yeah, that was a big part of it, but there was also facilities, too. Yeah. We had some fire remodels, and we're building a new substation over off of Park. So there's some really good stuff that's happening as a result of those dollars, and we'll be having conversation around that here in the not-too-distant future.
And Dylan brought up the RTA. There is some money in the current or the budget that we'll begin here in a couple of weeks. I think it's $14 million. It doesn't seem like a lot, but I guess it would fill a lot of potholes locally.
Absolutely. This is the first time that the city council has allocated general fund money for road repair. Mm-hmm. And at least since I've been here and probably for the history of most of the folks that have been around. And so it's important to demonstrate the importance of council's hearing the residents clamor for more road improvements. And so they've actually scraped out of the cash carry forward that we talked about right at the onset of the program and use that in or will be investing that into our road maintenance program.
Mm-hmm. What's going on now, Reed Park, the discussions with the zoo? Do you have any updates for us on that?
Sure. So we have gone through and analyzed the direction we got from council and mm-hmm. tried to put some concepts together. We're honing in on something that looks like will work. To at least be within the confines of the direction we got from council. So we're still working through it, having a lot of dialogue about that, but it is making some progress.
And satisfy all the players.
That's the goal. But the real piece is the direction we got from council.
How much more money is that going to cost? Just a napkin sketch. I know you're still working on the concepts, but to make sure that Barnum Hill and the other ponds stay in place and kind of maneuver portions of the zoo expansion around that area, how much more are we talking about?
Well, we had projected, Dylan, when we started the analysis, was somewhere in the $5.5 million range was what we were projecting was going to be the cost. Don't have any updated costs yet, just because we're still going through we'll call it the design phase mm-hmm. of some of that.
I want to talk a little bit about something called Ignite Tucson. This came up a little bit in our interview with Joe Snell yesterday of Sun Corridor. There's some budgeted money for that in this current budget. What is Ignite Tucson?
Sure, that's a great, great question and great program as well. So the mayor had actually brought a proposal and thought to the council saying, hey, part of the recovery of the economy needs to focus on, we'll call them legacy businesses, small businesses that may have been missed as a part of the federal dollars previously. And so the whole idea is how do we form a foundation or an environment where those types of legacy functions, those types of legacy businesses can be successful going forward. And so what we're in the process of doing is formulating what that looks like. We're working with our partners, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. In the region to do that. But there's also some boots on the ground as well. There were pieces that included the small business navigators to go out and help and really make sure that, you know, oftentimes when you're a small business owner, you don't have time to sit down and do an application or even know about an application that or a source of funding that's out there. So there's an opportunity to be boots on the ground, get out there, have discussion, make sure that we are doing our part to provide those folks an environment to be successful into the future.
Hmm. Your team, your cabinet, if you will, I still would like to get your new parks person here on the show. I'm just so busy, you know, we were so busy with the pandemic and everything like that, but now I would like to get her on. I believe she comes from Miami. She was involved with the parks department down there. How does the parks overall, what part are they playing in this budget?
So the parks
are darn important to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Including me.
So you referenced Lara Hamway.
Okay.
She came to us from Miami, really excited about having her as part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, she just finished moving the rest of her family and folks here. So we're really excited about her joining the team. So there is a very significant need in our parks across the board. You remember that we passed, the voters passed Prop 407, investing a ton of money into, you know, parks facilities and some of the connectivity, some of the pathways and so forth.
And voters said yes to that. They want better parks.
Absolutely. So one of Lara's first orders of business was to really get an understanding and a handle on what the resource allocation pieces look like. And so it's not just about, you know, how much money do you need, but it's also how is it distributed? And I know that matter of fact, I was just chatting this morning with someone about that on the team that says, hey, we need to make sure that we are following up on what the macro level investment looks like in terms of all the parks, but we've got some areas that are in need. They're older parks. They've been around a long time. They've got older facilities like playgrounds and those kinds of things, some of which will be taken care of by Prop 407, but then there's that need beyond that, which is the maintenance of the turf and all the pieces that go along with that. Parking lots, I mean, they're just the simple things that we don't think about, but that cost money. So very excited about Lara. I'll get her on. I'll let her know,
yeah.
Bill, if you're up
for
that.
I'll
have her come in and she can give you all the detail about her adventures.
Are the parks like Udall and all of them, have they reopened now?
All of them have been reopened. We are following CDC guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, the seniors were so excited about the opening of our senior centers. We again, following the CDC guidelines, there's opportunities for a lot of the programming to commence again or basically start up again. It's not the same as it was before. There's limits on numbers of folks that can be in a room. There's limits on how they sit.
Well, I need to get over to the Udall Center and start some kind of exercise program because I have kind of been a couch potato for 6 weeks, but I need to get over there and use the indoor track, which I have used extensively in the past. Dylan, we're about out of time, but we have not talked about a very important area, the 911 center and all the problems over there. Mike,
thought you were asking Dylan his opinion.
I just wanted to bring Dylan into the,
I want to ask about SunTrain real quick, too.
Okay.
But give us the quick update
on
911.
Is the morale, are things picking up at the 911 center?
They are picking up. and I'm very, very proud, as you know, and probably have seen some of the reports. Chad Kazmar, who's our deputy chief.
How's he doing with that
doing
project?
Great. He's solid. workhorse for us. He's doing some great things over there. And I think the big piece is they're in tight quarters. The facility improvements are underway. They should be finished up here. We're hoping by September, but October at the latest, which is really going to be a shot in the arm for those folks. But the big piece of that is really making sure the service delivery is tops. You know, we don't have an opportunity to make a mistake there. And so I think that's really been his focus. The team has really embraced that as the goal. They've done some great things. I've been watching some of the times, and they've just continually gone down in terms of calls for reacting to calls for service. So I'm really pleased with where 911 is going.
Something we've seen in several of the more, I guess you could call them, prominent incidents where something's gone awry, if not, you know, straight up wrong, is that there hasn't been someone there who is a good enough Spanish speaker to really engage with some of the callers. Like, even if someone is, able to respond to some questions in English, they, there are clear indications that they would be, you know, providing better information if someone was talking to them in Spanish when they call 911.
No, absolutely. And we're part of the, so we go back to the PAIC, I'm kind of showing you how all this stuff goes together, right? So as we talk about the recruitment and the retention, you know, the recruitment piece, it's extremely important that we find folks that are fluent in Spanish. Not everybody has to do that or has to have that skill set, but it is extremely important that we have that service available when folks call.
That somebody's actually on shift there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that is a big priority for us, is to find folks that are not only well-versed in the 911 and the dispatching communications, but also have that second skill set of being able to speak Spanish.
Dylan, we are out of time, but I'm going to, since it's my show, I'm going to give you about a, let's try to wrap it in
okay.
a minute. How about a minute?
Real quick. You know, many times over the years when the SunTran contract has come up, when there's been this, you know, talk of strike, et cetera, our columnist Blake Morlock has suggested several times that why not restructure and just make riding the bus free? And here you guys have done that for the past, not because of his suggestion, although he might claim credit for that. But
please give him credit.
You've basically done that for more than a year now, and are going to continue that at least through the end of this year. Is that something that might actually stick around? Is that sort of experiment working?
So again, showing how all this stuff goes together, right? When I sat down with the five-year model, that was one of the pieces that I suggested to the council. That's a dial we can turn up or down. And when you compare the revenue that comes in for that system, which depends on what year now, right? Because it's been kind of in flux for several years. It can be as low as $9 million and as high as $13 million a year. So the conversation then is, fine, let's talk about what that can look like on a free basis, but what does it mean exactly? And it's not just about the dollars. There's also operational pieces of that as well.
Yeah.
So we are going to explore that. Council has already hinted to me that they would like us to think about, you know, keeping it free for an extended period of time, and then making sure that we have the data. So part of the reason and the strategy with making it free the rest of this calendar year is to work on that data, those metrics that I then can bring back to them and say, okay, here's the actual cost and here's the true shortfall, if you will, by not charging our revenue. Is it in fact the dollars that we would have taken in?
All right, Michael Ortega, thank you very much for coming in, Mike. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Bill, and good to see you as always.
All right. Dylan, stick around. I've got a couple of quick things for you after we take the break. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com. vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our thanks to City Manager Mike Ortega for our Friday Focus interview. We did go a little long on the interview, Dylan Smith, so I've only got a couple of minutes with you, but something really that struck me is just so needless. Dr. Matt Hines was on the show Monday pointing out that, as you know, Dylan, he works as a hospitalist over at TMC. He had to admit someone very recently, a 25-year-old, very healthy guy, until he got COVID, and he now is on a ventilator, or he was Monday, and he was fighting for his life. He had not been vaccinated.
Right now, if you look at who's getting ill from COVID, and just a little bit ill or very seriously ill, and it is almost entirely, of course, people who have not been vaccinated. There are some folks who can't get vaccinated. It's not approved for little kids yet. Mm-hmm. If you have cancer or are on chemo, you better have a serious conversation with your doctor about it. Mm-hmm. But most people, it's perfectly safe and highly effective. Amongst the people who are not vaccinated right now, the rate of people who are getting infected is just as high as it was among the general population months ago before vaccinations kicked in.
Wow.
The numbers are, of course, lower, but we're talking about a different universe of people who are being exposed and falling ill. And it's folks who aren't vaccinated and quite often refuse to follow, basic social distancing, won't wear a mask, et cetera, et cetera. And I think anybody who's been paying any bit of attention over the past year and a half has figured out what the right thing to do is, and some people are just refusing to do it.
The percentage, where are we at for people in Pima County? Now, do they include the total population? As you point out, young children still don't get the... Give us kind of the overview quickly.
If you look at both across the state and in Pima County, the percentages are about the same. Mm-hmm. It's just under 50% of the total population has gotten at least one shot. Mm-hmm. It's still a little bit lower for folks who have been fully vaccinated. If they got their first shot of one of them, where they need to get two, a few more weeks, and hopefully more of those people will go back and get their second one. But we are nowhere near what it would take to have is that term that's been bandied about so much, herd immunity, kick in. We need to get many, many more people vaccinated amongst those who can, because there's still, a good 10 or 15% who cannot at all.
Mm-hmm. So COVID, unless we do get those numbers up, will be with us.
At this point, it's really looking like there are people who are just refusing to go along, and the pandemic might fade a bit, although certainly around the world there are places where it's still horrific.
Brazil, India, really
it's quite possible that it will be endemic and stick around and, come and go in spurts, much like the flu. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the flu, we've seen over the past year that because so many people were distancing and wore masks through what would have been flu season and washed their hands and on a regular basis, there are at least there's one strain of flu that seems to no longer exist anywhere in the world.
Wow.
And a couple more strains where scientists really can't find them anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we may have actually eliminated some flu from circulating any place.
Wow.
So just think of what we could do if we, did that for a couple of years, especially during flu season.
Wow.
Just wear a mask and wash your hands.
There you go. Dylan Smith, always a pleasure. Great to have you back in studio with me.
Really good to see you doing so well.
Thank you. I'm sure trying. All right, we'll take our break right here. We've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. That's coming up right after we take our break.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. All right, time to stir it up. Weekend Watch with award-winning Tucson publicist and Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist Matt Russell is presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to pile in the car, take the three-hour drive, and look at those weekend temperatures. It's 86 degrees. I love it. I always say 10 degrees cooler at least. That's the Buckmaster Show guarantee in the summertime. And coming into next week, oh my goodness, mid-70s for the highs. Oh, what a delightful weekend it would be in Silver City. Southwest New Mexico, spellitout.org, and start your planning now. Let's go now on the live line. Here he is, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, but did you say 70s in Silver City next
week?
Did I hear that right?
Mid-70s, overnight lows, upper 50s. You cannot beat that mile-high elevation climate, 5,000 to 7,000 feet. It will be cooler, I guarantee it. I'm ready for you. You know, don't they say it's 5 o'clock somewhere, always ready for a cocktail?
Yeah, you got it. Somewhere it is, and we're getting dangerously close to that hour. You know, I say let's kick off the summer version of Weekend Watch with a few summery cocktail options for your weekend refreshment. At Oban on 4th and Congress downtown, of course, there's margaritas and daiquiris. Those will cool you down in a jiffy, as well as their hurricanes. But check it out. There's a summer cocktail on the menu that might invite a little more rain for us here in the desert. It's called the Raining Mint, with spearmint rum and bronca, menta mint liqueur, passion fruit, lime juice, and creosote. So if that's not the monsoon in a glass, I don't know what is. So if we all have one of those this weekend, the rain will surely come. Check out Oban for the summer cocktails and do a little rain dance yourself.
Has El Charro launched the summer menu yet, Matt?
I just love this. You know, those of us staying around here in the hot summer months, I really look forward to this every single year. It's the new summer shrimp menu at El Charro that just launched this week. The Flores family has gotten pretty creative with their camarones this year, like their grilled garlic chimichurri shrimp over a handmade corn tamale with Oaxaca cheese. Another dish is grilled shrimp and bacon enchiladas with a poblano cream sauce. And you know, Bill, here's the best part. All of the dishes on this special summer shrimp menu are under $10.
Wow.
So there's an El Charro near you and all of your listeners. So start your summer celebrations with some shrimp this weekend.
One of our great partners on Buckmaster is the Reed Park Zoo. Anything happening over at the zoo?
Yeah, you know, Reed Park Zoo's summer safari is back every Saturday evening through August the 14th. Which is a great way to enjoy the zoo during the cooler evening temperatures with a lot of added fun. So from 5:30 to 8:30 tomorrow, you're going to enjoy live music and games and wildlife activities, carousel rides, and of course, food and drink specials, including local craft beer, prickly pear margaritas, some great wines, and other drinks and delectables. Admission is free for zoo members. And if you're not a member, only $10 for adults and $6 for kids. As you said, Bill, I just love our Reed Park Zoo, and I think Summer Safari Saturdays is really one of the best ways to experience it.
There you go, Matt. Have a great weekend. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Indeed. Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music by Christophon. Thanks to Rose Brandt and everybody here at KVOI, including Tom Fairbanks, our engineer, producer, and the whole Bustos Media team. Have a great weekend, everybody.